And good afternoon. Welcome to Market Talk for Wednesday, April 7, 2021. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you here with us. MarketTalkAg.com. That's our home on the web, MarketTalkAg.com. Find us Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of our streaming sources, our radio affiliates, everything on our website at MarketTalkAg.com. That is where you can find us, our home on the web. A mostly positive day in the ag sector today. Do have a little bit to talk about, though, in relation to that soybean and bean oil complex trading lower today. What's up with that? Well, let's talk about all of it. Bring in our good friend Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. Mike, good afternoon. And hey, mostly positive market for us to talk about today, buddy.
We have 2 weeks in a row now, Jesse. We can rest easy that we no longer affect the markets.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Let's start, though, with the soy complex. That was the one downside today, Mike. And yeah. I think some folks were looking at that and wondering, you know, what was going on there. Seemed like maybe we just had a correction that was long overdue in beans and bean oil. Is that what you saw? Can you talk us through what we saw there today?
Yeah, I think it was a buying of the rumor, selling of the fact when it came to the bean oil specifically, because that's been running sharply higher on tight supplies in Asia. And we actually have a fresh weather issue in Europe. There's enough frost around that France in particular is looking at losing potentially some of their soy oil, or I should say flaxseed or sunflower oil, a crop that's been recently planted. And it looks like a pretty wide-ranging frost, essentially all the way across Europe and into the Baltic states. So I think that was the primary buy the rumor, sell the fact. That news broke, and the bean oil trade went down, affecting the soybeans. I'm wondering, too, Jesse, and this goes back to Friday's WASDE report, I'm wondering with a recent expectation being thrown out, I think it was Agro Consult, if I remember right, came out with a fresh 137.1 Brazil soybean production number after the close yesterday. And I wonder if that didn't hurt the soy complex a little bit in terms of the soybeans specifically. And this is really interesting, and this is a neat dynamic because we've got the bookends of the very bullish grain stocks report and acreage report on the one hand, and now the other bookend is going to be Friday's WASDE report. And I'm really going to be eager to see what USDA says about the South American crop, because fresh intelligence coming from my colleague down in Brazil, Argentina border area is suggesting that when it comes to soybeans, he knows farmers in Rio Grande do Sul have lost 15% of their yields and they're pretty much done harvesting. And yet CONAB, the national agency, has that province a record projection for soybean production. Similar in the corn, maybe even more so in the corn. Paraná is an example of a province where production that has been seen by some of his farmer colleagues down 10 to 35%. And yet CONAB here again has Paraná corn production up 12% versus last year. Mm-hmm. We still don't have an answer to how good or bad that South American crop is. I think the trade is assuming it's good, but we're starting to see a little bit of price action in the port price in Brazil, something you and I've talked about.
Well, and let's talk about those world soy prices. And this is a graph you shared with me, and it's just, okay, we can kind of continue on and look at what you're talking about there. But it's interesting to look at all these factors, Mike, and especially as we're heading into this WASDE report on Friday. I'm with you. I'm very curious to see what USDA says about that South American soy crop.
Yeah, this chart shows you the orange line is the Paranagua port price. And since the end of March, we've essentially gone from $496 a ton U.S. to $525. We know that we're well over 80% harvested for the country. So you got to wonder, why are prices going up at the port? We know the quality is better than the trade was expecting because of those early poor quality yield reports. But here we are almost all the way through harvest and prices are going up. When that happens in our country, it tends to reflect a tighter or shorter crop than what the trade was expecting. So I think we really are in need of some good, hard, solid numbers. Having said that, the USDA Ag Attaché just came out with some fresh numbers, and they kept, I believe, both the corn and the bean production numbers in line with USDA's March number. And so we've got a range on soybean production in Brazil by trade estimates, 105 to 110, pretty wide this late in the season. I'm at 107. And I think, though, the trade maybe is hinting, and maybe we felt that in the corn today and yesterday with the return of the bull spread, is they're getting more worried about the return of La Nina in Brazil because it looks hot and dry the next 10 to 14 days.
Yeah, and that's something we're going to be watching very closely, that weather issue down there as well. On the court front today, Mike, fairly quiet day. I was happy to see us rebound those new crop contracts a little bit. We were a little weaker there. Old crop had a nice move today as well for corn, kind of testing some of those key resistance levels that looked like. You see, what are you seeing in the corn side of the market today?
Late last week, before the holiday, I went ahead and did a little bit more hedging of new crop corn because I didn't like the way the spreads were looking, and I felt like making new contract highs in Dease corn. It was just smart to lock in another 10 or 15% going into the planting window because, Jesse, I got to tell you, these acreage numbers that USDA gave us are not going to be accurate given what farmers are doing right now. They are planting beans like crazy. They're even starting to get into the corn. I talked to probably a half a dozen clients in the last 24 hours, all of them running very hard, mostly beans, but even some corn going in. And so unless Mother Nature comes in and pulls us way back and pulls the reins back on the U.S. farmer this weekend, I think we are going to see bigger acres, and we could see a record planting pace in the soybeans and maybe even the corn, especially this year. Having said that, I think you're right. It was mostly a bull spread day. I think the ethanol numbers really helped us. Interesting to note that the ethanol stocks went down substantially, almost 2.5%. We're down to late November levels. More importantly, we're only about a million barrels away from a five-year low in ethanol stocks, and that was that late October low that we made. And I'm very surprised by that. I was one of the few guys out there, or not one of the few guys, I was one of the guys out there that was talking about being really worried about ethanol demand because of the pandemic and the new energy policy, but the exact opposite has happened. And we saw unleaded stockpiles continue to be pulled down for the most part this past month as the summer driving season really does look like it's going to kick off. So I'm really encouraged by the basis levels at the processors for ethanol. It's really helping us. And on top of that, we had very strong weekly export inspections of over 75 million bushels. So unless USDA gives us a really negative report on Friday, given the South American weather for the Safrinha corn crop, which here in Brazil, again, that's 70% of the total crop. So it could go very quickly down in the next couple months if they stay hot and dry. And that their March 15th is their ideal end of planting window for that crop. They just wrapped up last week. So you're talking about a crop that is 3 weeks into the heat of the summer, just to start off with.
Mm-hmm. Are you do you expect a surprise to come from USDA on the Wednesday or on the report Friday with the WASDE report? We were coming off a very surprising prospective plantings number. I mean, for any pre-report estimates that you're hearing or seeing or chatter that you're hearing, do you think there's going to be another big surprise from USDA for the month of April?
It's unlikely, but I would say that many of us are focusing on that old crop soybean stockpile. I mean, none of us want to go below 100 million bushels because we just don't think USDA will do that. They will work the numbers on the demand side to bring up the supply and keep it, I think, above 100 million bushels. But if we would happen to slide to 100 million bushels or just below 100 million bushels, I think that would be a very bullish shock to the market, because that would say, hey, we cannot sell any more beans in the export market. And that's where the U.S. would essentially have to stay high in price. And it takes the pressure off of having to really aggressively hedge. On the converse side of that, I think what we saw again in the wheat market this week, even though we had unknown export sales of soft red wheat, we had good crop conditions. We've got some threats of frost. Here again, the wheat is the leader to the downside. Hard red wheat within a half penny this week of its March low, monthly low. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the report. And so I'm always really kind of geared towards USDA giving us a bearish shock on the supply side when it comes to the wheat ending stocks, maybe more the world ending stocks than the U.S. stocks.
Let's talk a little more about wheat. And I know we got the first weekly crop progress reports out on Monday, and that seemed to give a shot in the arm to this hard red winter wheat market. So let's talk about that a little bit, Mike. What did you see, not only with that crop progress report, but just today's trade and the last couple of days of trade in KC wheat?
You know, the idea of buying soft red wheat and selling hard red wheat makes perfect sense, because I really can't disagree. And I have to say, I agree with USDA putting that 2021, which is the red line here on our chart for the state of Kansas. From what I know and what I'm hearing from clients in this state, I think we are almost as good as 2019, if not better. I actually had a client near Wichita, Sedgwick County, one of the top five counties in the whole state for hard red wheat, tell me this past week that he's got the best looking wheat he's ever seen in 25 plus years of farming. So I think that a condition is going to continue to go up, and I would expect at some point during this month that we would see the 2021 conditions go above 2019 for this state, and that would probably drag up the whole country in the United States as a whole. So I really am watching the technicals very closely here, Jesse, because I didn't get that fundamental rally off of the acreage and stocks report that I really wanted off of the weather coming into April here. We just completely flipped on the weather. So I'm telling clients right now, and this is as of this past weekend and just a couple nights ago, I really think that the technicals want to put a low in here in the wheat complex, but we really need the USDA to not come in and mess it up and give us bearish fundamentals, because the dollar has hit a two-week low. The Russians are, you know, they got the Egyptian business, but they're being very cautious about letting too much wheat go out the door. I think we've got a low in place. It'd be counter seasonal for right now, but that's where Friday's report means a lot to me.
Let's shift gears. Let's talk livestock. A very strong day today. I was happy to see hogs futures battle back after a little bit of weakness to start the week. And again, maybe we're gearing up to run this hog market higher. Hard to say. It's only one good day here this week. But what are you seeing in the hogs? I know fundamentally it just sounds like everything under this hog market and the cattle market too. We'll get to that in a minute. But the fundamentals are just remaining strong there.
Yeah, the only weakness we have, and this is where the cattle have come in, and I'll stay on hogs, but it has to be mentioned here, the retail market has swapped out, it seems. The summer grilling season, much like the summer driving season, is coming on board for the beef sector. The high pork prices, especially cuts that continue to be featured, I think the consumer's just kind of getting tired of those same cuts that are being featured. So I think the pork retail sector is probably the most negative feature, given the price and given the cuts. As we head into the summer proper. But we got, as you say, they came around today. Why was that? I think it had a lot to do with the Philippines coming in and saying, look, we thought we were going to buy 160,000 metric tons of pork this year in terms of from other companies, countries, what we're going to import, but we're going to import 400,000 metric tons because we're cutting the import tariff for pork because A, we have the demand coming back, and B, African swine fever is not allowing us to produce it or find it in other parts of Asia. I think that was a massive boost because Philippines, you don't think pork, but they're actually sometimes the number seven buyer of pork in the world. So they're a sleeper market. They can really come in and change the balance sheet tables quite a bit. And today's news was, I think, certainly something that would be classified as feeding the demand bull. And I think that's why the hogs came back on pretty nicely. Having said that, I'm going to stick with the program with what we've talked about the last few weeks. I really think the April market looks tired. I think once the April market goes off the board, it would make sense the May would find some correction. Maybe that's a dip to buy, though. We'll have to see how that retail market holds up.
Well, and it would be interesting to see if there's a dip to buy there or not. We broke that $100 barrier, and we've held over that here for the most part, working ahead here the last couple of weeks. So that's been a good sign there. We've at least held this sort of floor for a little while. Now, we were seeing that spread between cattle and hogs get tighter and tighter, but now it looks like, you know, you mentioned the beef demand is picking up with summer grilling season. And it just seems like that spring rally in cattle is underway, and we're really starting to see, I feel, a lot of energy in these cattle markets, Mike.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, I will separate, and you know, one thing to wrap up the hogs, this is where the puts come into play. You and I talked about when we got above 102, 103 in the summer markets, getting into some bought puts and putting floors underneath me. I really feel comfortable where we're at on the pig prices right now because I've got something underneath me for the next 60 days in case something really bad happens. Otherwise, let the cash marketings, you know, make me more money. Now, getting back to the cattle side, I think there's a distinction here that's developing. I'm in agreement with you wholeheartedly, Jesse. I think the demand side of the equation is coming on. That Central Stockyards auction today came in 120, 122 for Texas and Nebraska. pretty good volume as well. And so we finally found, it looks to me, to see cash demand meeting the futures premium. So we've closed that gap. Feeder cattle, however, are a whole nother situation. We continue to build a futures premium against the cash index and against Oklahoma City feeder auction prices these last 2 weeks as I've kept track of it. And I think we really got to remember, in markets like we've had here the last 4 or 5 months, that corn market and that corn feeder spreading can really come in and do a job on you potentially in terms of buying corn and selling feeders. And that's the fund driven market, not really fundamentally driven market. So I'm real eager to get feeder hedges in place. April through June marketings are high here recently. In May, feeders was around 153.50. I think our high today was 153.15. If I can get up to that high and test it, punch through it, I'll start scale up selling. I may do puts, but I may also do a combination of puts and sold calls, because I do think this is just a really terrific hedge price to be and to really lock in a really strong hedge here at these price levels for the feeders. Whereas fats, I could let those go another couple weeks, I think.
Yeah, and you know, at least it's encouraging, like you mentioned, that to see those prices out in feedlot country hitting those 120s, those 122s out there in parts of Texas and Nebraska. And I know we were seeing some bids out there as well around that 190 mark in the north today. So really, I'm encouraged by us finally breaking out of that range there in cash country, Mike.
Yeah, and you know, we would not be here had it not been for almost the 20-pound drop in dressed weights in the month of March. And that's really the bottom line, is that we saw the supplies remain fairly high in terms of on-feed numbers and placement numbers, but we didn't see the weights continue to go higher, and we're actually back to where we were last year, and that just shrunk the production number by default. And I think that was if there was one missing link that we needed all throughout the winter, it was that, and we can thank those high grain prices for that.
Mike, any outside market factors we need to watch here moving forward as we're looking at these prices in the ags and whatnot, and just stock market quiet today, but I know crude oil, we've been watching that market as well. Anything on the outside markets we need to pay attention to?
Well, you know, I think, Jesse, between the ISM numbers, the Institute of Supply Management numbers, and some of the producer price indexes for inflation readings at the wholesale level here in the United States and in China, I think we are looking at maybe the birth or the genesis of some demand pull inflation. In other words, wages may be on their way up as we go into summer and we break out of the COVID pandemic. We've had cost push inflation, which has been a market where you want to hedge rallies. If we are starting to see more demand pull inflation and the dollar can go back below 90 even, and the Chinese currency can go back up above its February highs, I think you've got a situation where you may be able to extend some gains in terms of funds investing and allocating into the commodity sector. Does that mean grains and livestock? It's too early to tell right now. But if we have any supply issues that continue to be present, like planting delays, for instance, we may have some real, you know, pop in this market that I want to be real cautious about not overhedging.
Mike, any final thoughts with that WASDE report coming up on Friday? Anything you want to reiterate or any other final thoughts for today?
If it's a neutral report and we're still hot and dry in Brazil and it looks wet in the United States Corn Belt, I think the market will slough off this report. So that's what I'm kind of gunning for.
Well, Mike, I know you got a lot of great information on the website and you got the newsletter with the free trial and everything else. And folks, just they got to reach out to you and sign up for that and take advantage of the free trial and more.
Yeah, please do. I think it's a really important time, even though you're planning and super, super busy. Most of the clients that I work with, I'll get something out by 8 or 9 o'clock at night. They'll read it 11 or 12 o'clock at night or 6 or 7 in the morning before they start their day. It's really handy, and I think it's really necessary. So please go to the website, globalcomresearch.com, and sign up.
Yeah, globalcomresearch.com, globalcom with two M's, research.com is where you can find the information. Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics. Appreciate the time as always on this Wednesday, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Jesse. Have a great week, sir.
Mike Zuzulo joining us with Global Commodity Analytics. You can find us online by going to markettalkag.com. This has been the Wednesday, April 7th edition of Market Talk. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Have a great